It's time for Making It Personal, a personalized SC podcast brought to you by the South Carolina Department of Education's Personalized Learning Team. Let's jump into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Making It Personal podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Beach, and today I am joined by some special guests from Batesburg-Leesville Primary, and I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves, and then we'll jump into the conversation.
Hi, I'm Michelle Maroney. I currently serve as the assistant principal at the primary school.
And I'm Jennifer Richardson. I'm the assistant administrator at the primary school.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about your journeys prior to taking on these leadership roles.
All right. Well, back in 2017, there was a small group of teachers and some of the admin. I remember we went somewhere in Richland County with Knowledge Works, and we started learning about the foundations of the personalized learning framework. And from there, when we brought it back to the schools, we worked on disseminating that information. And then teachers chose like one of those foundations to really dive deeper into to focus their own learning on. So it was very personalized for our staff as well.
I was a classroom teacher at that point. I was teaching Montessori, which has personalized components already built into it. But through that process, I identified a couple of different areas that I wanted to specifically focus on, especially flexible seating, flexible learning environments, and then students setting their own goals and using some data notebook tools. So that's kind of where I started. And I was a grade level chair. So I kind of helped disseminate that information within my chair and spread it amongst the Montessori folks. And from there, we just continue to progress to where we are today. And we can get more into that. But that's kind of where we started with this journey, just personally.
And I would say looking out across the school, flexible seating was a big hit with the school. Like that was probably where I'd say 75% of us dove deep. And you started to see a change in choice seating for kids. You did see some choice boards come about. And we saw maybe about 20% of people, they were trying to dive deep into goal setting. Okay. But it was very surface level when we got started.
So tell me about how you continued on in your growth. Give me a picture from that point growing all the way up to when letters came into play.
So as we dove deep into our pockets of learning, from there, COVID hit us and it hit us hard. During that time, we were still very involved with Knowledge Works and deepening our understanding of personalized learning. So over the summer, it was by choice, but teachers could join in for some PD regarding personalized learning. And then we started to build out some continuums of learning that was district-wide. So once we gained an understanding of what the expectation was of continuums, we gained an understanding of how we were going to categorize priority standards and what that meant to us.
From that point, what we really did was start meeting with, it started out district-wide. We take the standards and look at how this first grade standard affects an English one. And so really look at how that vertical articulation goes. And then from there, we broke out into more like grade level teams and started prioritizing the actual standards. We chose the most critical, the ones that were helpful, as we call them, in supplemental, things that feed into that overarching expectation for each grade level, which again influences that continuum. And from that perspective, we were able to start building out what we use as our learning progression. So they're more child friendly, that go into individual students' data notebooks, and it tracks where students are and how they're working towards their goals. We have it categorized each standard, critical standard, by like a beginning, then a making progress, progressing, then a meeting the standard, and then an exceeding the standard. And so students don't really understand that if they're just beginning, that that's not where they are supposed to be. They don't have that understanding. And I think that's important because it shows them where they are and where they're trying to get to. Rather than honing in on you're not on grade level. Now it's I'm here on this progression and I'm going to get there and my teachers are going to support me.
I love that. Now, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering at the primary level, what does that look like?
I can tell you as a teacher, when it first started, it looked like report cards were about to go home. And so I had my rolling cart and all my data notebooks, carrying them to my car. And I was reflecting personally of what was going on in my classroom with these students. But as time went on and we really got a grasp of what we wanted this to look like, it became students being in charge of, and that data notebook was like your lesson plan that we towed around as teachers, or our teacher manual. That was their learning manual. And so they carry that everywhere they go. And every time they feel like they've mastered something new, or they're ready to show you as a teacher, hey, I've got this, they pull out that data notebook and we address, this is what you were working on. This is the lesson that you might be doing, or the assessment you're taking, and look at where you are, look at where you started. And we let the students stamp it in the moment. So it's supposed to be very authentic. Students are celebrating those things right then as they happen, and not waiting to the end of the 9 weeks when report cards go home. And therefore, it puts them in charge of being able to explain that learning to their parents when they get home with that data notebook also, because they know what's inside of it.
Mm. And I could say the message that we continually preach to our teachers is that data notebook is a living, breathing document. It's not the document you take home at the end of 4 to 5 weeks to assess your children. It's like she was talking about, it's very in the moment. And even now when we meet with teachers, and you start to hear the frustration from a teacher being, oh, it's just so overwhelming. Like, I'm having a hard time getting my report cards finished on time. Well, then when you start asking them as far as stamping off the data notebook and filling in the report cards, when is that happening? It's happening at the end rather than all throughout that learning. Mm-hmm. So trying to shift some of those teachers' thinking then gets them on board to where we need it acting in the moment.
Yes, I love the transparency, because when you think about practices that are sustainable for educators and practices that are not sustainable for educators, the constantly assuming all the responsibility for the learning is in line with those practices that just aren't. And I love that you all have, you know, you expressed that you started there, but you're helping teachers be able to shift that control and that power and that autonomy to their students to be able to know where they are. And I love what you said earlier about how wherever you are is okay. Well, y'all, let's shift gears a little bit into talking about letters. So we get several questions about letters as we travel the state, but I would love for you to start with just explaining to our listeners, for someone who's never heard of letters, A, what is that? And B, what does it look like in your instruction?
My first introduction to letters was our principal had come across, I guess, some information from Frances Marion, and I was the literacy coach at that point in time. So she thought this might be something you're interested in. So she and I sat through the Letters for Administrators course. And I remember sitting through that course thinking, these people have lost their mind. There is no way that we can teach kids how to read without running records and guided reading groups and without workshop Lucy Calkins, the whole nine yards. There's no way. Well, I signed up for the course and got heavy into it. And then Michelle and I started having conversations. And I'm like, you know what? In reflection, that makes so much sense. Like, this is really good stuff. About that time, the State Department came out with the Palmetto Literacy Project schools that were going to participate in letters. And so she and several other administrators and our interventionists jumped on board. And from there, we kind of became the advocates for letters here in our school. I'll tell people who've never had any exposure to it that it is not a curriculum. That is, it's not this product that's going to come to you and you can pull it out and just start teaching from it. That is not what it is. It is truly pedagogy. It is the way we need to be teaching students how to read. It really unlocks all the questions, I think, that teachers have as to why do we do this and why do we do that. It answers those whys and those hows. It also helps you understand as a teacher that teaching reading really truly is a scientific process. It's not something that we as humans are just innately born to do. It's hard work. It's really hard work for teachers and for students. And so for me, it really unlocked a lot of those questions. And I am a real scientific believer. So if I have a good, firm understanding of something, I feel like it really resonates with, okay, I know what I'm doing now. I'll tell people another thing that it's really phenomenal for is, whereas when we used to work with reading levels and guided reading groups, it was kind of making assumptions about students as readers, what we thought might be the issue. I think letters has also opened that door for, we're able to identify the actual deficit because it's so scope and sequence based. It really tells you where students start, you know, what the processes they go through, the phases they go through as readers. And so it's so much easier to identify what their need is, which will segue into personalized learning in a minute when we talk about that more. But it's really helped us in terms of supporting students and identifying what it is that they need and what we can do. In terms of what it looks like in the classroom, again, it's not a package. They're not going to send you, you know, this crate of silver bullet answers for reading. It does, however, equip you as a teacher with a toolbox of ideas and things that you can do. And again, it just answers that why.
It has really made a difference as far as our teachers being able to pinpoint, this is what the child needs. This is what I need to get them to the next area. And when we start having conversations, as far as re-tiering students and seeing whether they're advancing to, we need them in tier 3 for more intensive support, or even at the end of the year when we start talking about, do we have students that we need to retain? We're getting much more specific information about that child and what those child's needs are.
So in your opinion, do you think that letters supports student-centered learning practices? I know you kind of alluded to that a little bit. And if so, how has it helped you continue to meet your students' needs?
I would say 100%.
Okay.
We are in a better spot. We started kind of midway last year. Our teachers were well enough into letters. The majority of our teachers are now in volume 2. So they're almost at the end. But we started some processes here within the school last year about mid-year. So we got teachers' feet into letters good and then started implementing some changes. And the impacts that it has made for our students in our school has been just undefinable. I mean, it's really been incredible because it's tied to personalized learning. We're using the tools that Letters gives you in terms of some of the assessment resources to across the school progress monitor students on a monthly basis. And from there, define what students need. So it might be students in kindergarten that are working at a CVC word level. And there might be students in second grade that are working at a CVC level. Well, we're doing some flexible grouping across the school now. It's school-wide where those students who have similar needs are now going into a classroom with a teacher who really feels confident in teaching that. And they're getting an extra 30 minutes every single day that is personalized to their specific skill deficit. It's incredible in terms of watching the growth that has happened over the course of this year. It's also really important that the teachers are feeling confident in what they're doing because they have the training to back it now, and they're connecting it to what's going on in their classrooms. Gosh, I could go on and on and on, Michelle.
We use that letter screener, and then students stay in these groups probably for about a period of 4 to 6 weeks, and then we reassess and we regroup students, and it's a very involved process. And I remember, I think it was back in October, we shortened the time between the reassessment, probably down to at 4 weeks, no later, and we were ready to regroup. And we had teachers across the school saying, it is too early, we just assessed them. But it was neat to see how many of those students showed, I'm ready for the next level.
Wow.
So you start to build that teacher confidence in what they're doing. The kids are excited because they're like, I'm on to the next thing. I get to get, and they never know who's going to be in that class with them because it's constantly shifting.
Is that what you consider your enrichment time, or how is that kind of framed in the school day?
We do this every day. This kind of takes the place of what was our Panther period prior to this. And what it looked like before in Panther time was it was set aside for small groups. It might have been a 30-minute period. But when you think about a teacher having a range, I mean, it could be a range of 5 to 10 different levels within your classroom and having to meet all of those. You can't meet all those kids in one Panther period. And then you also have to think about what are my other kids doing while I'm meeting with this group. That puts a huge strain on a teacher having to prepare all of that. Now students have that targeted skill. They're getting met with every single day on that targeted skill. And teachers are not having to plan for what are the other kids doing and being sure it's meaningful. It is meaningful. So it's very powerful.
Yeah, it sounds very powerful. So how has your approach to student-centered learning changed or stayed the same since letters has become a part of how your school operates?
It's honestly trickled down into, first of all, we need letters for math. I've been trying to keep up with it. It looks like there might be something out there that the state's working on right now, and I'm excited about that. But we took the flex grouping and those foundational skills that Letters preaches, and we've kind of been digging into what that looks like in math. And so we're flexing in math now too. So it's really influenced practices. This one PD opportunity has influenced practices across curriculums and subject areas. So that's really been impactful for us. I think that it has made us more definitive in what we're doing in terms of meeting kids' needs. I think that we're being more productive in the use of our time throughout the school day. I think we're including staff members that wouldn't typically have been included in instruction. Our paraprofessionals are teaching groups for us. We are getting ready to integrate in our speech pathologist teaching groups for us. Our special ed teachers are teaching groups for us. So it's like a full on, we're taking this on, it's going to happen. So it's definitely created a culture in our school of learning and meeting kids where they are, but also encouraging them to get to the next level.
I think it's also very powerful when you hear teachers sit in a grade level meeting and they say, my favorite time of the day is flex time. These are not my students. These are our students. So it really shifted the mindset across the school because it used to be very territorial. These are my kids. I'm afraid to send them anywhere else because I don't know what they're doing over there. But now they're seeing growth school-wide.
That is so good to hear. And another question that I have is, do you all do any cross conversations at the elementary level with some of the practices and things that are happening at the primary level?
Probably more so at the leadership level.
Okay.
As we meet for our admin meetings, we have those conversations. We did have those conversations as we first started on this journey to developing these data notebooks with the progressions. A lot of those conversations took place. I would imagine we'll see those pick up again with our new standards for next year as we're starting to identify which ones are critical, helpful, and supplemental.
I will, however, say there has been conversation in terms of there are students at the elementary school because of COVID, because of all the things that have happened in the world, just changes in pedagogy, so on and so forth. There are students at our elementary school who are still struggling readers. They are in fifth grade, and those poor fifth grade teachers don't come equipped with the capability to teach students how to read, because by fifth grade, you're really reading to learn. So that's been a conversation for sure between the primary school, K-4 through second grade, and the elementary, third through fifth, because Letters is giving them those skills that they can utilize to teach those students who have those gaps in their learning. So yes, there's been some conversation about some of the practices. And I think as we continue to move forward with this process, teachers of older grade levels will start finding the validity in what we're doing and how it might impact their teaching later on down the road too.
We've heard from educators that Letters training is really, really intense and is very vigorous when teachers are going through that. But the question we often get is, you know, how do I personalize learning while doing Letters training? Or we'll hear teachers say, we don't have time to personalize because we're doing Letters training. What would you say to an educator who might have that viewpoint? What advice would you give them from your experience?
As far as in the midst of doing Letters training, it is a heavy lift. The training does require a lot of time. I can say that from the school leadership standpoint, where we used to plan PDs on those extra days outside of instruction, we were very limited because all of our teachers were involved in Letters training. But looking back, the value in that training, there are no words to express that. It's huge. And it has then in turn shifted a lot of what we do in our classrooms here. We did work on suggested pacing for our teachers, so that they wouldn't get overwhelmed with the online modules. They could see, okay, if I'm in the middle of this training this month, these are the ones I need to get done by the next month so I can stay on track with it. We had some grade levels, they worked together as a team to complete those modules. So it opened up a lot of good conversations for it.
And to be completely honest and transparent, I think that if you look at the Letters training as something I have to do, it's another box to check, and you're not really involved in the training. You know, the video is playing, but you're not engaged in it. The book is open, but you're not really reading it. it's really easy to excuse things like, I don't have time to do this. But I think if you're intentful in your reading and your understanding and in your learning, you'll automatically start making adjustments to personalize within your classroom without even realizing it. You're going to start picking up on those things that, oh my gosh, this kid is in the pre-alphabetic stage. Wow, this is what I should be doing. Or this student really is struggling with phonological awareness. I could start doing this. And you start playing those videos back in your head and thinking, wait, I could do that. You know, I think it just kind of happens naturally if you take the training seriously and you use it for the purpose of becoming a more impactful teacher.
I love that you put it that way, because it really is about the intent as you're going through. And if you're kind of already thinking, how can I use this as another tool in my toolbox to help make learning more transparent for kids, then that happens. My last question for you all is, what advice would you give educators or leaders who may not be fully in the thick of their student-centered learning journeys, but desire to make learning a lot more personal for students? What advice would you give them in terms of where to start?
I think for administrators, the important piece is involve your teachers in that decision-making process. They've got to get invested in the work so that the work is impactful. If it's administrators handing down demands of, okay, I want you to take this, do this, it's going to be a check it off the list as I get it done, but you're going to lose the impact of it. I think for both administrators and educators, if you've got those tools and you know what the foundations of that framework for personalized learning is, dream big with it. There are ways to mesh the two beautifully. We've seen it work, and we still have dreams where we want to go even further with it. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we're on the cusp of it. We're so used to, we get into something, go big, we have to slow ourselves down so that we don't leave teachers behind. But dream big. It is possible.
And my advice would be to take baby steps. You don't have to conquer the world in a school year. If you're making progress, progress is progress. Progress is positive, you know? And then I think the most important part is, whereas I might be super interested in the goal setting data piece for students, somebody else might be really interested in the learning environment piece of it. I think that the same way we're preaching that students have voice and choice in their learning, teachers have to have voice and choice in their teaching. And I think that's where good teaching comes from. We got to trust teachers that they know the right things to do for their students, and equipped with the information, they will do those things. Give them that choice and voice in it.
That reminds me of a saying that we always like to say from our team, which is to think big, start small, and scale fast. Thank you all so much for just sharing your story. And we want to stay in touch with you to see these big dreams and how they manifest as the year progresses. If there's anyone listening who wants to get in touch with you, maybe to follow up with you more specifically on some of the practices that have been working for you and your students, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Probably by email. My email is mmaroney@lux3.org.
And mine is jrichardson@lex3.org.
Awesome. Well, ladies, thank you again. We'll be right back to close things out.
Thanks.
Thanks again for tuning in to today's episode of Making It Personal. Connect with the Personalized Learning team by visiting our website, personalizedsc.ed.sc.gov. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, share with a friend, and tune in for a new episode every month. We'll catch you next time on Making It Personal. See ya!